Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And there's a Trump-driven narrative about the news media that's going to gain some traction now, probably, and probably much more than it deserves, because there's a certain simplicity to it if you don't actually think about it for more than a second. The narrative is the news media got the Trump and Russia story wrong, and therefore the news media should be seen as untrustworthy at best, enemy of the people at worst. Well, let's take a step back. Assume for the moment that the snippets of the Mueller report the attorney general has released are representative, and he really could not establish criminal conspiracy, Mueller couldn't, with the Russian government. Let's assume that is the gist of Mueller's conclusions on that. Well, just because something isn't criminal doesn't mean it's not news. Take the Trump Tower meeting. It happened. It was an attempt by the campaign to accept help from the Russian government. Mueller apparently has concluded it wasn't criminal. But should journalism not have reported it and connected the dots? Like, oh, look, they're holding a campaign meeting with Russians who they were told explicitly were sent by the Kremlin. At the same time that Trump is secretly seeking a Trump Tower Moscow deal and covering it up to the public, at the same time that he's saying all these nice things about Putin and changing the party platform from anti-Russia to pro-Russia on Ukraine and trying to weaken NATO, Putin's number one foreign policy goal, journalism, in addition to Mueller, connected those dots. So even if the Trump-Russia relationship isn't criminal, it raises a lot of questions. It was highly secret. And journalism basically did its job by uncovering as much of that as it did, because that knowledge is obviously in the public interest. With us now, Washington Post media columnist Margaret Sullivan. She has a piece called Serious Journalists Should Be Proud Of, Not Bullied Over Their Russia Reporting. Some of you know that Margaret Sullivan also used to be the New York Times public editor, that sort of ombudsperson role, assessing coverage from within. Hi, Margaret. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Nice to be with you.
And listeners, how served have you felt by whatever news media you consume, specifically on the Russia investigation? 212-433-WNYC. There are no right answers and no wrong answers. And on your own choices, what have your own media habits been? And do you second guess your choices as a consumer of media with respect to Russia, how much you paid attention, how what kind of eye you came to it with, anything? 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Margaret, why do you think the big national news organizations should be proud of their Russia reporting, as you say?
Well, they've uncovered a lot of facts, which is actually what the, you know, reality-based press is supposed to do. They are not supposed to predict the conclusions of a of an investigation, nor are they lawyers who, you know, do the investigation. So I think that, you know, all of the digging that was done by the major news organizations, oh, I shouldn't say all of it, but almost all of it, has been, you know, has been very well done and has served the public. Many of the stories about Russian interference in the election came to the public eye through the news media, and the president was, as you may recall, denying that. He thought the interference might have been done by a guy in his basement. So, you know, on that basis alone, and many others, the reporting has been in general very solid. I will say, Brian, that I think the obsession with this story, particularly on cable news, has sometimes gone too far.
Is cable TV a problem for the rest of the press?
You know, people tend to conflate, you know, when you say, do you trust the media? It's a very hard question to answer if you really dig down just one layer, because what is it we're talking about? Is it the New York Times, or is it Fox News, or is it, you know, Saturday Night Live or Stephen Colbert? It's a very, very broad brush. So, but many times people seem to be talking about cable news programs when they consider the media. And so, it, you know, the Washington Post can get can get sort of caught up in that and judged by those standards, and I don't think that's always particularly fair.
And you're concerned that there's going to be too much self-flagellation, I guess, and the result is going to be a chill on reporting important stories in the future?
I think there could be. The headlines on the first day of the after Attorney General Barr's interpretation of the Mueller report came out were not particularly nuanced. You know, they basically said exactly what President Trump would want them to say, which is something pretty close to Mueller report exonerates Trump, period. That's actually not the case. In fact, even in what Attorney General Barr has summarized, he was clear that on obstruction of justice, Mueller said he went out of his way to say this does not exonerate him. So, I think we can say, maybe we should be more, a little bit nicer here and pull back a little bit, pull our punches because everyone's calling for our heads. And I don't think that would be right. That's not our job, and it's not what we should be doing. We should be doing the same fair-minded, aggressive reporting that has essentially been what's been going on for a couple of years now.
Let's take a phone call. Jack in Manhattan. Jack, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on your description of where the narrative goes from here. Brian, the investigation into collusion by Donald Trump was handled very poorly by the media. To begin with, the entire premise is that he colluded with Russia to get elected president to build one property. No one ever reported on how many properties he has.
Wait, the premise is much broader than that. I'm not going to go over all the things, but maybe there was, there were indications of cooperation that led an investigation within the FBI to actually take place. The news media had to report on that. There was concern that there might have been quid pro quos of taking dirt on Hillary Clinton in exchange for sanctions relief. Michael Flynn was forced to plead guilty to lying about Russians, about talking to Russians about the sanction relief. So I'm just saying there was a lot that actually happened in the government and in law enforcement and the campaign that the media had a responsibility to report. Are you arguing against that?
Well, yeah, because there's real estate developers, financial institutions, Fortune 500 companies spotted all over Russia and Moscow. And to think that he wanted one property and that he would throw an entire election and collude with Putin and the government of Russia, let's admit one thing. I don't think Donald Trump is smart enough to be able to pull any of that off.
Jack, thank you very much. We're going to go to Kylie in Manhattan. Kylie, you're on WNYC with Margaret Sullivan, media columnist for The Washington Post. Hi, Kylie.
Hi. Brian, you're a national treasure. Thank you so much.
You're very kind.
So I guess my question is, the news media positioned it as Mueller versus Trump rather than Mueller versus the Russian investigation into the Russian interference in the 2016 election. And I'd be curious to know what you guys think about how the media can reframe the conversation so that it isn't Trump won and he's exonerated, let's move on. Instead, there was Russian interference, that's a problem for the country, let's be patriots and talk about how we improve the election for 2020.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure I agree personally with that premise either, that by and large, even on most cable television segments that I've seen on Trump and Russia, it wasn't, I don't think, portrayed as Mueller versus Trump, rather than Mueller as a straight shooter trying to answer the questions. And there were many disclaimers in respectable media about You know, we don't know what Mueller's going to find. Let's wait to see what Mueller finds. I don't know. Margaret, what are you thinking as you hear Kylie?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you, Brian. You know, I think that it got turned into something of a caricature by people who wanted to, you know, kind of undo the results of the 2016 election and didn't, you know, very much didn't like Donald Trump. So they kind of turned Mueller into this potential savior who was going, I mean, I think this is all very unrealistic, but it did happen. You know, people who had the Mueller candles and shrines and buttons and all of that stuff. I mean, that was never the case, but, you know, you can't control how people portray it. I don't think that serious-minded journalists did portray it that way.
You quote the editor of HuffPost, Lydia Polgren, talking about two listening tours she did in the past 2 years. What did she say to you on Sunday about that?
So she said that when they went on their listening tours of the entire country to see what people really wanted news coverage to be, they got very, very little indication that there was interest in this whole question of Russian collusion. And so, as a result, Lydia Polgren, the editor of HuffPost, said they really didn't put their reporting resources against it. They decided to cover things like housing and crime and race and things that they had heard people were much more concerned about. And I, my own reporting on this, as I've talked to people about their level of trust in the news media, has echoed that. It makes it absolutely makes sense to me.
Have you looked internally? I don't want to put you in an awkward position. You know, it would have been more appropriate maybe when you were the public editor for The Times, where it was your job to assess what The Times was doing. It's not your job to assess what The Washington Post has been doing. But I did go back and look at some of our count for how many Russia segments we did. So from January 1st in this year, we have done just 9 specifically investigation-related segments out of about 240 segments that we've done on the show so far in 2019. And some of our listeners might recall when we did our annual 30 Issues in 30 Days election series before the midterm, I did have an impression that there was so much Russia talk out there. Maybe it's because I was paying attention to what cable news was doing, but so much Russia talk out there that we branded our fall election series 30 Issues in 30 Days, Everything Except Russia. And that's what we did. We did an entire policy-oriented 30 Issues in 30 Days segments, no scandal or investigation. So I'm just curious how you assess Washington Post, if you do, or major non-cable news media, in terms of, you know, by that Lydia Polgren standard, the amount of coverage and resources devoted.
I think most of the excess has come on cable news. I don't think that the Washington Post overdid it. They certainly haven't. The Post has not dug into this question to the exclusion of you know, multitude of other things. I mean, in general, and I'm not talking about the Washington Post now, but even if I, you know, portray the sort of reality-based press, as I like to say, I think there's been a whole lot more interest in the Russian collusion story than there is on the part of regular people. You know, that's my impression, that we've found it to be a particularly enticing and sexy story that's worthy of our attention and investigation in a way that may be more than normal people would have for it.
We'll continue in a minute with Washington Post media columnist Margaret Sullivan. I'm going to bring up, and I think a caller might be referring to it, so maybe Vincent and Glenn Cove is going to do this, a critique of the coverage as being excessive and frequently wrong from the left, from Rolling Stone's Matt Taibbi, when we continue, which you cite in your article, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. with Margaret Sullivan, media columnist for The Washington Post, who has a column called Serious Journalists Should Be Proud Of, Not Bullied Over, Their Russia Reporting. And Vincent in Glen Cove, you're on WNYC. Vincent, thank you for calling.
Yes, Brian, good morning. How are you today?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it. You know, my point that I was trying to make was that I noticed time and time again that whenever we're possibly, I don't want to use the word lied to, but when a story is twisted up or jaded, soon after, once it's proven to be false, soon after, politically or news outlets, we find comedy on the situation. I want to remind you of the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein did not have, but that was the leverage our government used against our people here to okay the intrusion. Mm-hmm. So when I opened up the newspaper today and I and I saw the tournament style bracket of who's the worst media outlet, I don't want to use the word, but the fake news, right? I just find that to be insulting to us. And I almost feel like, when are we going to catch on to this?
Who had that bracket?
I believe it was the Daily News.
Vincent, thank you very much.
I saw it in the Daily this morning, but again, it's right. Like an insult to injury. We've spent 2 years, God knows how many millions of dollars on this false accusation, and it just seems like a waste of time, money, and resources. Do you agree?
I tend not to agree that it's a waste of time, money, and resources to run down this story, which had a lot of potential significance for our democracy and with all the things that were out there. And let's face it, Robert Mueller got 37 indictments. Most of them, many of them, have already resulted in guilty pleas. You know, the security of our elections from foreign hacking is very, very important. All that didn't happen was that he didn't find that Donald Trump or some of his family members committed criminal acts. So it still seems to me that that's, you know, the bracket may be making fun of it, which may or may not be appropriate, but that this is one of the very important things that has happened to our country, in our country, in the last couple of years. And so it was worthy of a lot of journalistic resources. Vincent?
It's worthy of the proper resources. Truth. I 100% agree. But as of now, it's proven that what we were told is not the truth and that it didn't happen. And I agree with the other caller about the one real estate property. Is it really worth throwing away an election for that? That seems a little foolish in your logistical mind. But I just, again, the trend that I'm noticing here, Brian, is that we're not told the truth. And then when the truth is exposed, it's then a joke. I can't seem to get the image of President Bush on Saturday Night Live looking for weapons of mass destruction in mm-hmm. his drawers of his desk. 500,000 people died, Brian.
Vincent, thank you very much for your call. We really appreciate it. By the way, we looked it up, and the bracket is in the Post, and that doesn't surprise me, the New York Post. Daily News, you know, tends to be pretty hawkish on Trump, so I would have been surprised if it was them, and not surprised that it's in the New York Post. But Margaret Sullivan from the Washington Post, he compares this to the No WMDs reveal. And as you write in your column, so does Matt Taibbi in Rolling Stone. His headline is, "It's official, Russiagate is this generation's WMD." And he cites examples of overreach, probably, I mean, I'm way oversimplifying a very long article that he wrote. But I think his basic premise is a lot of overreach and willingness to suspend skepticism on the part of journalists out of either wanting to get the story and be ahead of the pack or bias against Trump. He, you know, refers to CNN, who had three network journalists resigned after a story purporting to tie Trump advisor Anthony Scaramucci to a Russian investment fund was retracted. ABC's legendary investigative reporter Brian Ross was suspended after getting a Russiagate story. And he says, Matt Taibbi says, this is our generation's WMD media story. How much do you agree with him?
I think that's a terrible comparison, and I completely disagree. The the weapons of mass destruction credulity on the part of the press was an absolute disgrace and one of the worst things that's happened in journalism in the past number of decades. I don't agree that this is compares at all. You know, when I hear people, including some of the callers, saying we were lied to, I don't agree with that. I mean, in what way was the news media lying to the public? They were reporting on a special counsel investigation and the underlying issues. There was no lying about it. There may have been too much emphasis on it. There may have been too much obsession with it. There may have been too much speculation. But there were no lies. I mean, the things that you mention and that are in Matt Taibbi's story, Brian Ross and the CNN people, you know, these were cases of news organizations getting something wrong or things that they thought were wrong and taking measures to discipline staff. To me, that's responsible. We're going to get things wrong. We're human. Mm-hmm. Over a course of 2 years of reporting, we're bound to do things that aren't completely right because we're human beings.
In our last 30 seconds, here's how it's already being weaponized. New York Times quotes a Trump campaign official who says, they weren't telling you the truth about this thing. They aren't telling you the truth about ISIS. They aren't telling you the truth about the economy. So very broad brushing how they want people to perceive the news media.
Sure. And I mean, this is not a new approach on the part of the Trump administration. They have used the news media as a punching bag, and it works for the base. So, you know, no reason to stop doing it, I guess, from a political point of view. But I think it hurts our democracy.
Margaret Sullivan, media columnist for The Washington Post. Her new article on this, which I just misplaced, is called Serious Journalists Should Be Proud Of, Not Bullied Over, Their Russia Reporting. Margaret, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.